Tripper Stories.
Episode 10. We've made it to the fucking 10th episode, bitches. We are here crystal freaking clear. Welcome back to Stripper Stories. Okay, so I know you can feel a difference in your loins. I can feel them in my holes. Now that is a new microphone, bitches. Last week we had horrific technical issues. There was no penetrating of anyone's holes because it was so awfully sounded. It was like I was underwater drowning a difficult death. So this week I've got you by the balls, by your dick and by your balls. There's no getting away. So yeah, thanks so much for whoever, and I mean whoever, stuck with us on that dreadful voyage of discovery last week. This week is going to be much easier for your holes to be penetrated with this new setup, so enjoy. Firstly, I'm going to demonstrate how good this microphone is. With all of the whispers that you can get that you've not been able to receive before, all over your fucking faces. Oh, I can even do Darth Vader. That is fucking making my life. So yeah, okay, you're going to get a lot of that. I'm really glad that I've got this microphone. You're going to get lots of shit all over your faces. Starting off today, I am going to introduce a guest. Now, not just any fucking guest. A guest who I've had to convince over weeks and weeks of bearing my pussy. Not just that though, genuinely this dude, he's a customer of mine, someone I would call a friend and someone I met through working on adult work. Now, I don't think I've ever listened to a podcast before where there's been stripper and customer, escort and customer. I mean, please send them in to me if I'm missing one, but I've looked and scoured the internet for them. And I don't know, I'm just fascinated by how we will interact, in a recorded environment. Normally it's a very private environment. So I'm really excited to have him on here today. He's a qualified doctor and psychologist, and he is an avid, I guess, conversation starter on the history, the psychology behind sex. We're going to talk about a lot of interesting shit today. Now, We've naturally been having these conversations while I've been chatting to him in a private setting. And so I thought, what would be better than to share some of this word vomit with my listeners? So I'm really freaking excited. I'm going to come in my pants, but not with him today, with you. And I actually genuinely can't wait to hear what comes out of both of our mouths. So keep your ears peeled for that audio whore later on. I'm going to have a tiny bit of discussion with you guys though before he arrives about OnlyFans. Now, or OnlyFans. How do we feel about it? I mean, there's been a lot of chat about it in the media recently with celebrities like Bella Thorne, Cardi B, opening OnlyFans accounts. Now, I mean, personally, I feel like anything... Oh, what did I just sound like then? Oh my God, I sounded like, have you guys seen that John Travolta thing on YouTube when he introduces Idina Menzel at the Oscars, I think, and he is reading off a, like an auto reader, and she's going to sing Frozen, and he goes, the wickedly talented, the phenomenal singer, Idel Dazim. And it's literally like tumbleweed, and her name is Idina Menzel. And everyone's like, what? How can he say that? She's the most famous singer in the world. And he calls her Idel Dazim. Now, this fucking microphone is actually living my fucking life for me today. I can hear myself. I can actually hear my pussy vibrating. It's that, ooh, can't go too close. it's that good. Oh, yes. Right. What were they saying? OnlyFans. Get back to the point. I think anything that is bringing the sex industry to a more mainstream media is a great thing. However, I would never want it to distract from the legit girls making their money. And there has been a lot of bad press that I have seen after Bella Thorne and Cardi B bringing out their OnlyFans accounts, because they're not OnlyFans accounts. Now, if anyone doesn't know what an OnlyFans account is, it is a way of people subscribing to a person in a place that is a much more safe environment than Instagram, where things are locked, like pictures, videos, and private messaging can happen, like kind of the DM thingy. On the OnlyFans account, people have to subscribe for a monthly payment of whatever it is, whatever the girl decides. So like from like 1 month to 3 months to 6 months to a year, and they do sales and stuff like that. And so if you're a fan of someone on Instagram who has a really big following or a celebrity now, you can now see them in, I guess, more slutty avant-garde environments. And I mean, if I was subscribing to something, I'd want to just see a normal girl, because you're more likely to just get something that's real. I feel like these celebrities now who are doing OnlyFans accounts are really just giving you the, you know, the backstage pass to WAP, the WAP music, WAP.
Oh yeah, WAP.
Very middle fucking class of me. The WAP musical, the WAP music video, which is what Cardi B's done. She's like, ew. She's like, guys, check out my OnlyFans account. It's got the backstage pass to the WAP video and all of my gossip. I'm like, oh, I don't know. OnlyFans is meant to be there for like another caliber of thing, right? You want to be getting something a bit more slutty than you'd normally get on Instagram. But I feel like Cardi B has basically said, no pussy, no ass, no tits. Don't expect it. Bella Thorne, however, she's done these promo videos on her Instagram of her, like, getting out of the pool and rubbing her nipples and, like, lots of water, like, dripping down her face in a slow motion. And you're like, you had a director, a choreographer, 15 hairstylists, and this is your OnlyFans account. I'm like, that's just not, I'm not sure that's really how they envisaged it start, like, being, like, some of the best OnlyFans accounts that I've seen are just raw, like, unapologetically just filth. And that's cool too. I mean, personally, I'd want to subscribe to something like that. But if, I mean, I guess, you know, like, whenever the, like, Jennifer Lawrence sex videos or sex pictures, or the Kim Kardashian sex tape, or the Paris Hilton sex tape, or all the different fucking sex tapes, people still watch them. They want to see these people who are in the limelight in a more avant-garde environment. So I guess why not OnlyFans? But I don't know. I don't know whether it's me just being a bitter old hag, but I'm just like, it's like being a stripper. It's like watching that Hustlers movie. It's like, I love the Hustlers movie. I loved the people in it. I thought it was really well done. However, it's like, that's not, is it gonna make just the average girl just want to try it out? You're like, oh, just don't clog up our strip clubs with just this average pussy. Do you know what I'm saying? Leave it to the professionals. And also at the same time, is it gonna affect other people's pockets? You know, it's like, if you've got loads of like weird binty girls in the club who just don't know what they're doing, clogging up the queues left, right and centre when all of this corona's over, you're just like, oh, just fuck off, you know, like leave it to the old girls who actually know how to make the money. But then at the same time, everybody should get a chance, you know, like, you know what I mean? I don't want to be one of those girls who says otherwise. But is that how we feel about OnlyFans? Are we just like, leave it to the professionals, leave it to the girls who've started doing it since day dot? There's some girls on there earning so much money from it and like nailing it. And then now you've got these celebrities like, oh my God, like, this is a cool thing to do. Like, oh my God, stripping is cool. Let's make a film about it. Oh no, now OnlyFans is cool. Like, it was completely frowned upon before. Okay, now we'll jump on that bandwagon. Like, I'm not sure if that's completely how I feel about it, but there's an element of that. So, as always, I say Instagram, guys, if anyone's got any anything we want to talk about, or got anything you want to talk about, or you feel any type of way about OnlyFans, please message us on there, DM us, give us abuse, give us dick pics. We want it all. Stripper Stories Podcast, and be our friends. Yes. Now, without further ado, I introduce the wickedly talented, the phenomenal singer, Dr. Kink. That's his alias name. Yes, guys. Dr. Kink.
Okay, so here he is. Here he is on the podcast. Now, I'm going to use a little sexy name instead of your real name. A little anonymous, a little nonny. We're going to call you Dr. Kink-a-lot. How do we feel about that?
I mean, I don't know. That's fine. I'll go with it.
We'll go with it. So welcome, Dr. Kink-a-lot, to your first time on the show. How are you feeling?
All right. Yeah. Excited to be on the show.
Yay! Thank you for coming. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Okay.
But kind of said a little bit about you already on the podcast, and like kind of introduced you to everyone, but yeah, I think you should go for it. Tell us a little bit about yourself. on the spot.
About myself. Oof.
Yeah.
What do you want to know?
Well, you're a psychologist, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we kind of get down to the fact that when we met on like adult work and stuff, right? So mm-hmm. It was a kind of sexy environment, and then, you know, like one thing led to another. We ended up talking about loads of really interesting topics like psychology of kink,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. And I found that really fascinating to get like a medical perspective of like the stuff that's going on in my brain. Because obviously I meet a lot of people who have loads of different types of kinks. I'm like, obviously I brain spilled to you one day and I was like, so what does this mean? What does that mean? And you had answers for all of it. And I was like, actually, that really makes sense. So, like,
that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, you're useful. You're a useful dude. You're useful to have on the show. So, like, where do you think, like, what does it say? And, like, the things that you've learned, like, where does certain kinks come from? Like, where is kink from?
So, there's one school of thought that believes that when I say neurodevelopmental, it means like from the womb itself, like there are genetic. I don't know myself. I have not read into that, but genetic, like mark the genes that predispose you to having certain, what they describe, paraphilia, fetish is a paraphilia.
Right. Which is, for just for the people out there who don't know what that is.
Yep. Most fetish has to do with like, when I say paraphilia, it's like something that's either non-living,
right,
or maybe extensions of like of the human body that people are sort of aroused by.
So like what? Like feet?
Yep, that sort of thing.
Right.
And then if it's non-living, things would be like latex, I guess. And then I think you've talked about chairs before.
Oh, the good old chair fucker. We know who he is. Yeah, so would that be from like when he was a kid and he was playing with a chair? Is that what you're trying to say?
So, this is hard to say. So, I mean, when I say neurodevelopmental, that is stuff in the womb. But then if we talk about, so people, they say maybe high estrogen levels. If you're left-handed, these sort of things can predispose you to developing paraphilias.
Oh, wow. So if you're a left-handed person, you're going to be a bit more kinky.
Because your brain works a bit different.
Wow. Okay, so basically everyone out there who ends up going on a date with a left-handed person, they're not going to turn out like Ted Bundy, but they might be a little bit weird. Is that what you're trying to say?
Hey.
Yeah. Back.
Right. I think we've finally figured this out. I don't know what the fuck was going on with my internet, babe, so sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
No worries.
Right. Let me just grab my book. So we were saying that people with a left hand who are left-handed, who with a left hand. People who are left-handed, we basically need to worry about, because they've clearly got some weird psycho Ted Bundy shit going on in their heads.
Not weird psycho Ted Bundy shit, but they're more likely to have, paraphilias could be anything, like not that, you know what I mean, like something fairly... it's only a psychiatric problem if this paraphilia or this fetish is causing the person disturbance and disturbing their life, like causing disturbance in their lives, like it's some urge that they don't like, then it's a problem. It would become an illness. But if it's not a problem and the person's coping with it okay, then it's fine.
Right, okay, so basically what you're saying is as long as people are just into loving the feet or into loving the shit or just into loving it and they can live a normal life.
Yeah, they can live a normal life. That's fine. Right.
I see. Okay, and so as we were talking about this like a couple of weeks ago, I think me and you started talking about this and you were like, oh yeah, like kinks mm-hmm. come from when you're in the womb and then when you like, you were talking about when you're a baby and you first learn pleasure from your mouth.
Yep. So that goes to like, they call this a psychosexual. So this is another school of thought that feels that you learn these kinks that you get actually come from experiences in your life. So it must have been like a strong early life experience. And that's right. Paired with like a really intense, like you're really aroused at that point, and also really intense experience happens at the same time. They postulate that can become... become a fetish, and then if you have fantasies about that and you masturbate to that, or you like it, kind of reinforces it and broadens that arousal and makes that become sort of part of like a habit, a part of you.
Right, I see. So like you said, like the babies, they end up getting like a pleasure from their mouth first of all by biting things and sucking things, and then they end up learning how to shit on their own, which is like anal, obviously, or like whatever.
So, yeah, so like yep.
And is this a Freud?
So these are Freud's psychosexual stages of development.
Right. Okay.
Some people don't like what he talks about, but like some people do still subscribe to it.
Yeah, I mean, thinking about it, it does make sense.
Yeah, I think it does.
And like, you know, like when you're talking about it, like, oh yeah, you know, when you masturbate and like you get to like orgasm stage, you're like, oh yeah, put something in my mouth, because you're like,
I want to
like, you know, experience all the holes, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But so maybe that's got something to do with it.
I think we did talk about that. We'll get to that at some point. We'll come to that. There's more. That's gets interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
So yeah, well, I mean, if we go back to the psychosexual stages of development, so I mean it's like the oral stage that you're talking about. So it's, you actually derive pleasure from your mouth. So because as a baby, you derive pleasure from drinking milk off your mom.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're going to, the mouth is your most pleasurable like zone at that point, and you feed into that pleasure, because according to Freud's theory in life, there's the two opposites. It's like pleasure and tension. And we are always seeking pleasure. And then there's always some tension that kind of opposes that and makes it harder to get that pleasure. And through that, we develop our identity and such. But so in the oral phase, let's say the oral phase, if something goes wrong in that phase and you're not able to go past that, or you regress back and you're stuck in that, you will develop oral tendencies. So even people who tend to smoke cigarettes are considered to have oral like tendencies. They're like, putting things in their mouth. People who like munch a lot, I guess.
Who have the munchies a lot? We don't know who that could be.
No.
Right, I see. Okay, so they could be stuck in the oral phase.
Yep.
So basically, so is this when like your mum's milk's been taken away too early or something?
Could be. That's what some people say.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so or like, so basically, girls who love sucking dick, they weren't pleasured enough orally when they were a child.
Possibly. Or you could have maybe learned it later on as we would consider it like a paraphilia. And in some sense, like you learn, it's like a learned behavior maybe that you do like doing. And the mouth is a pleasurable zone anyway.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. So what about anal then? Like, what about me?
That's sort of your age 1 to 3 years when you're learning potty training.
So basically, I love to shit.
If you're like anal retentive, like if you're holding in a lot, and you have like that tends to, they say people who are like that tend to like, anal, they're like very orderly, organized, you know, like very everything's clean and neat. And then you have like anal, like they say, anal expletive. Like, so you're like, it's, I mean, if we differentiate the two, as a child, the first one would have been like when your mom's trying to potty train you or your mom, dad trying to potty train you, you did not want to shit. And you held it in, and then for some reason you had pleasure from holding it in.
Oh, right. Like the power.
Yeah, because anus is, again, that's a pleasurable is one, and you're learning about it. You're learning that, oh, you can take shit.
Wow, because now I'm thinking about this, right? I'm like, I really want to ask my mum if I was really good at shitting when I was a kid, because if she'll ask me, she'll be like, so Chloe, why are you asking me these questions? And like, I just want to explain the reason why I fucking love anal. No, like, I need to find out. So basically, so that could be a reason. So like,
it could be
playing with your arsehole.
It could be. Yeah, it could be.
Wow. So
none of these theories are actually like very scientific. Like none of Freud's theories are very scientific. But I don't think the mind is very scientific. I don't know. I personally don't feel that we can like pin it down on science so much.
No, you always say that when you like talk about your work and stuff. Like you're like,
yeah.
How do we even explain this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, books just don't give you the answer sometimes, right?
No.
I think it's the same with sex, though, isn't it? Like it's not. Not one type of thing is right or wrong in sex. It doesn't matter. Like it's like you just said, if something becomes a problem to a certain person or they're finding it hard to live their lives, that's when it becomes an illness for them. Yeah. But it would be a different type of illness. It's like some people might not be able to handle the fact that they love shitting on people or they love pissing. And so they'll be like, oh, God, doctor, how do I deal with this? But other people will just embrace it. So
true.
Yeah, so it's like, is that kind of what it is? It's kind of like...
Yeah, that's kind of what it is.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. And that's interesting. Mm-hmm. We watched that movie, didn't we? Well, I did, and I told you about it. And you were like, oh, that's exactly what I meant.
Dangerous Method.
Yeah, Dangerous Method. So anyone out there who hasn't watched this movie and they kind of want to figure out in a very cinematic setting what we're kind of talking about, is this film with Keira Knightley and who else?
Fassbender and Viggo Mortensen.
Oh, yeah, you have Viggo Mortensen. I was going to remember his name when I was trying to tell you. I was like, Aragorn, son of Arathorn. And you were like, Viggo Mortensen. Watch this movie because it's actually really, it breaks it down for the
show. Yeah, it does.
Me. Because, I
it's a bit extra. It's like, it's a bit extra more dramatic and probably a bit more romanticized. Like, all those, a bit more gratuitous. But, like, it's still, it gives you a good like, understanding. Yeah,
because obviously Keira Knightley, she loves to be like beaten up, doesn't she? And she likes to be like sexually. And obviously back then, that wasn't seen as being as accepting as it is now.
Yep, yep.
So she went to the doctors about it, and he was like, "Oh, this is why." But very fascinating film. You liked it, didn't you?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, in the end of the day, they did like they made helped her accept who she was, and not like what she, and she kind of sorted it out.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's interesting. It's really interesting.
She was feeling bad that she was getting off on all these things.
Yeah, there's like
kind of changed her attitude to that.
Yeah, I think that's basically what it is sometimes. Like, I think that the negativity towards sex and like specific sexual acts and sex work and sex anything, it's all derived from others.
Yep.
Or like what society or religion says is.
But...
Yeah, and it's like like Catholicism says that sex is only to be used as a method of making babies and should never have there's so many restrictions on it.
Yep.
And in like because you're Hindu, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
And like so, there's a completely different side of what sex is in that religion. Yeah. Completely different.
That's true.
Like, talk about that.
In Hinduism, I mean, nowadays, if you look at practicing Hindus nowadays, they are almost like Muslims or Christians or people of any other faith. They try to suppress, repress. Mm-hmm. It's the same. But back, I think a long time ago, the Hindu religion was, or Hindu way of life, they were more open to pleasure.
Yeah.
There are like temple complexes in like North India where... All the temples, like all the carvings in the temple, are just erotic. It's all erotic art.
Oh, yes.
Various poses of, doing different things. So it's like it was seen as an okay thing. And they say like in a person's life they go through different phases. So as a child, you're there to play, have fun, and then do some studying and work, and then you get to a point. And then once you finish studying and you're an adult, you can work. You're on your own. You have that. That's the time. Yeah, you're allowed to have pleasure. You're allowed to make money. You're allowed to do all these things. It's part of living in this world.
Right.
That's why there's a text, Kama Sutra.
Yes, yes, yes. Everyone's heard of it out there, surely.
But it's not truly like a book on how would you say on sex. It's not just sex. It's this philosopher who wrote it, and it was a guide on how to live well.
Right.
The nature of love, like how do you find a life partner, you know, maintaining one's love life, and then it does go on to like various sexual positions and things, and how to, you know, have sex to the best, like basically teaching you, you're allowed to have pleasure, go and do it to your, you know, maximum if you want to do it, but like in a conscious way, you know.
Yeah, not just like fucking like have the best orgasm. It's like different ways of finding sexual pleasure with like touch and different positions and different other ways of finding like ecstasy mm-hmm. through orgasm and pleasure with another person, right? That's what I kind of have heard about the Kama Sutra. I mean, I haven't read it myself, but
I haven't myself as well.
Yeah, I'd love to read it. I'd love to like actually we should like have a little read of it and come back and talk about it on the podcast, because like I mean, it's one of those books that you hear a lot of like older couples will go and read it, because they're like, oh, they're trying to find like a different kinky way to like spice up their love life, but genuinely like it does work.
I've not heard anyone's, you know, personal experience, but yeah, so I don't know. I couldn't say.
Well, yeah, I mean, a few of my customers when I used to work back in the strip club, they would like mm-hmm. come in and they'd obviously be reopened to strips, like strippers. That's just one vibe, mm-hmm. like by and by. But they were like, oh yeah, no, me and my wife have like started reading the car. Oh, we're going to like these special classes, these like like sexology classes and things like that. Okay. All like teach you the insides and outsides of the Kama Sutra. And quite a lot of older couples actually look into that. And I don't know if there's something in that, but
probably.
So like you're saying now that so like Hinduism is getting a bit more rigid, but back in the day it was all about the big wooden dildos, the big wooden cocks.
That's the thing. I mean, everyone thinks of Hinduism, they think of like, I mean, when they think of sex, they think of like Tantra.
Yeah.
People hear the term tantric sex or Tantra related sex, but not necessarily true.
What is that? Explain that to us, what that is.
Tantra is more like the physics of your body. So only people who are very, very experienced in these things can actually do it properly. They are able to manipulate the energy meridians in their body, the chakras, these sort of things.
Right.
And bring about a change in their person. So they can elevate their, in a very layman way of saying things, to elevate their consciousness to higher states.
Well, like kind of like mushroom high.
Yeah, like meditating and these sorts of things to sort of play around with your body's energies and make it do things that it normally couldn't do.
Yeah, because people have been talking about this in like, I was thinking about this the other day when I was thinking about talking to you on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And like, they've been talking about it since like the 1800s, 1900s, even in different religions. And they've written books about it. Like there's a book called Lady Chatterley's Lover. Have you heard of it?
No.
And it's a book by D.H. Lawrence. And it basically wasn't published till like 33 years after his death. Because it was talking about like this heightened state of like sexual consciousness, and like mm-hmm. it was so pornographic, mm-hmm. and it was just explaining in really like layman terms like the spiritual power of sex and how it can free us from, you know, the sense of like separateness that you have from one to another, and the heightened awareness of and a connection to like the world as well as with another person.
Yep, that's exactly. I mean, so these sort of things. I mean, when you move into like Tantra, and then if you talk about sex in terms of Tantra, that's what they're kind of saying. Like, you find a person who is self-conscious and able to manipulate their energies and knows about these things, and if they can find an adequate like sexual partner.
Yeah.
And their sex is no longer just for pleasure.
Yeah.
It's for evolution of both the partners. Like they manipulate the energies, they take it to higher levels, but with through sex. Like, they use sex as a tool.
As a tool.
Yeah, because I mean, as you know, when you are having sex, it does stimulate. Like, I mean, it's an altered state of consciousness. You're in like all these like the dopamine and all the different endorphins flooding your brain.
Yeah.
And I mean, even the like the final point of orgasm, no one can really explain too well in science. Like, what the hell like, you're experiencing at that point?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it is like your consciousness is altered at that point. So they use these things to again alter their state of consciousness to raise it to higher levels.
Yeah, it's weird because like so you're basically saying that things like, you know, hallucinogenic drugs that people use to like get a different perspective on things, sex can be used sex like can that.
Yep, exactly.
And so how does one get to that place? Because like I mean, I'm sure a lot of girls out there are thinking, oh my god, like last weekend I went to the pub and I met this guy and he had a massive fucking dick and I had the best orgasm I've ever fucking felt and that was the best one I've ever had. Like, is that what we're talking about? Just big
no I don't sex? Think so I don't think so.
Okay,
I think it's something more than that, but I see. I haven't, I mean, that is probably like a big fantasy of mine as well, but I've not never. Yeah, I think it would take a lot of, no, I mean, to reach those kinds of states with someone that you really, really like and really care for. And it would be like, I think it would be an intense experience.
Yeah, but like, how the fuck do you get there? That's the question. Like, is it about like experiencing lots of different things in different holes? Is it that basic? Or is it just knowing someone else's body really well? Or is it just being really open in that relationship?
Again, it's something I can't say. I'm not very sure myself.
Yeah.
I understand that is a, so like in tantric practices, there are practices, so like the one we're talking about is using the external body. Things external to the body to raise your consciousness. So in essence, when you're having like sex, like transcendental sort of sex, like it's with somebody other than you. So you're using someone else to reach that point, or you're using drugs, because even like some drugs are used in like some of the aghoris in India. They tend to use, like they smoke lots of cannabis, but again, we don't know if they're doing this for fun or they're actually experiencing anything of it. And there's all, yeah, so like that's a what they call the left-hand part of Hinduism, and then there's right-hand part where people are more like, you know, they try to sublimate the sexual energies. But in the left-hand part, it says go out and like, experience things, and then through experience. So in some ways, you're right in saying you go out and experience everything and to a point till you know yourself completely, I would think.
Right.
And then to meet someone who is also in a similar state, and maybe then you can experience such things.
Right, I see. So you basically have got to come from like two sides.
You have to know yourself. You have to know yourself. Well, you need to have like done, yeah, lots of
sexual.
What they would call is the term is called sadhana.
Sadhana.
Yeah, it's like a methodical discipline. Like you do something to attain a desired sort of desired goal or desired state. And it could be anything. It could be like people perform lots of different like acts, like, you know, fasting, not sleeping. And in that term, in that way, the left-hand part that I was talking about, so the part that tells you to explore and do everything, sex is a sadhana, is like you see sex as you are having, you're making love to the divine mother or the divine goddess, and you treat it as such. And that takes you by doing that, the act of that is an act of devotion to God or the goddess.
Wow, that's so intense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, so basically, this is what this like, cause I've read about it a little bit. I mean, I don't know half as much as you do, but like, it is definitely been written, and like all the things I've read is like, this is what everyone's looking for, but it just very rarely happens. And and it's one of those things where you see people who are still together after 50 years of marriage, and you can feel that they're not just there because they are plodding along.
Yep.
They've actually still got a sexual like desire for each other. Do you think those sorts of people might have touched on that?
I can't say. I have very little experience in these areas.
Babe, we need to get you that experience. We need to get you there. Because I mean, fuck, like talking about going back to kinks as well, because that's something that really fascinates me. And like talking about, you know, we've spoken about like where it comes from and like how it's starts off with those people who get to the place like the Ted Bundys and like the fucking freaks, like that guy I told you, well, actually I told everyone about, like, on the first episode, the Munter guy, who was like, I just want to fuck their body, like, really fucking weird shit. How does it get to that stage? Is it like they, I don't know,
if we look at like what Freud was talking about with all those stages of development, and he says at some point you hit like a block and you can't progress past a stage,
right?
So the same thing kind of happens also once you've passed all these stages. I don't know, you can, so he talks about like how, you know, we were just talking about how the way sex is viewed outside, and, you know, how the prevailing social norms make it, and some things are frowned upon and some things not so. But when that happens, people tend to, they live in a way where they are repressing their sex unconsciously. They don't realize these sort of things. And then they have a wrong sort of understanding of what sex is. Maybe it's very repressed, that it's such a big thing in their heads, but then it never lives up to be that.
Yeah.
Like when you actually do have it never lives up to that. Yeah. And then porn as well. If you're watching lots of that, you're like, again, your tastes can change over time. If you're like watching the same, I mean, you lose like, it's like sensory overload. Like you get too much sensory information, and at some point you're like, you don't need that. That doesn't get you the same high anymore, and you need something else. It's like a drug.
Oh, this is what I'm like with my asshole. It's like one thing goes inside it, and then something bigger needs to go inside it, and before you know it, you've got a massive gaping asshole. Is that kind of what that is kind of about?
I mean, more like this is like a series of months, years, where you're like really like into this, and then you develop a fetish, a paraphilia. You like something different because your sexual appetites have changed. You're suppressed in some ways, and then you turn to something else brings you more pleasure than the normal.
Right. Mm-hmm. But then comes the like argument, like, how do you keep sex interesting, like, with one partner? So like, you know, because ultimately not everybody is, you know, destined to be monogamous. I'm sure there's lots of people out there who don't want to be, and they have, like, you know, they're in thruples or quadruples or in different types of, like, and that's all good, that's all great. But like, for those people who ultimately want to be monogamous, how do you keep things interesting without getting to those crazy fucking stages, and then, you know what I mean, not getting in that same routine?
I mean you need to be accepting of each other, I would think, you know, accepting of each other's likes and dislikes, and be like pretty open about sex. I think, you know, if you want to have like a relationship with good sex, probably you need to be very open with your partner.
Yeah.
About it. I think that's probably the only way. I think that's the only way you'd even reach, like, if, you know, these states of like sexual ecstasy we're talking about. I think you could only do that if you're open, honest with the person you like. It's like there is no difference between you and the other person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like that's what they say happens in sex. It's like some ways it's like a destructive act where you're two egos are meeting and they're both dissolving and becoming one for a short instance.
That's what's her name said in the film.
Yeah, that's what she says. And it does explain it very well.
Yeah, you're right. Like, a destructive act.
Yep.
Becomes something like something else, or positive.
Mm-hmm. This kind of ties back to like what I was talking about in Hinduism, like the left-hand part.
Right.
And like worshipping like the goddess is like, in the left-hand part, the gods are mainly goddesses.
Right, okay.
And they're very fierce, fierce women, like very fierce, strong, very powerful, and scary.
And so scary.
Their worship is fierce. That's why it involves like sex. It could involve drugs. It could involve sacrifice, like blood and sort of thing. So that's why you get some of these things where people go sacrificing in temples. And so it does a little goes on sort of in Eastern India, where they still follow what they call as Shaktism. So like they worship the Divine Mother. It's more prevalent in that part of India. Like the Divine Mother is everything.
In other
sort of sects of Hinduism where it's mainly a masculine form.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm all down for the female form. I'm all down for the female energy. That's great.
Yep.
That's sick. Yes. So I need to research into this. This sounds super interesting. So, like, does this mean, like, in women are seen as the more like sexual aggressor, like the more dominant force?
Yep, that's right.
That's wicked.
There are, if you do search the internet for like left hand path or Kali is like the form of the most fierce form of the mother goddess.
Yep.
You will see a picture of her sort of on top of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva looks like a corpse, and it looks like she's making love to the corpse.
Ted Bundy shit.
But actually, I mean, he's meditating. So what they're trying to say in this is like the masculine is passive, sort of static.
Right.
Shiva represents pure consciousness.
Right.
And Shakti, the feminine form, she represents energy. Like she's dynamic. She is fierce. Like she's moving around. And that is, you need both. You need the dynamism. That's like the material world and what goes on in the material world. And then the consciousness that kind of sustains it, that gives us this experience.
That's so weird because someone said to me this week, and it was one of my friends, she was like, in any relationship, to have the balance, and this is just us basic bitches, basically saying what you just said, but in a very, very shit way. In a relationship, you need that one person's the balloon and one person's the rock. And you've got to have the balloon to have the rock. You can't have two balloons.
That makes sense.
Babe. So basically, that's kind of what you said, but with sex. You can't. Mm-hmm. That's so fascinating.
I mean, not sex. It's just this is the sort of the explanation for life, for the world.
Yeah.
Because it does come down to the sex energy is what creates everything. I mean, none of us would be alive if parents did not have sex. It's like that. There's something in there that brings that creation energy of creation.
Yeah.
And so these tantric practices, they're trying to manipulate this energy of creation to get higher states.
That's mad. I really hope that, like, I don't know even how. I mean, do they have in India or, like, I mean, have you heard of it ever, had them ever having, like, orgies and shit like that?
No. I mean, you've got all these, like, weird gurus that come now and again, and then they get framed for having... because in India it's seen as frowned upon. Like nowadays sex is like, oh, it's not, but it's getting a bit better. They're being a bit more open, but like it's like sex is seen as something really bad. So if a guru is found having sex or they catch him, he's gone. So that has happened to a few of them in the past where they say they've been naughty. but I don't know what they were doing. Maybe they were doing something, they were practicing something, or they were having fun, who knows.
I mean, I still find it.
I wouldn't recommend anyone to go to India or learn from a guru in this. I mean, go to someone like I wouldn't know because I've just read about these topics myself and learn about it myself.
But I mean, you know what? Like for me, it's still fascinating that sex, the thing that, you know, like you just said, everybody comes from the one act that everybody has to do to produce and for us to be alive and exist. Yep. Is given such bad rep and given such bad negativity, like since the dawn of time in every religion, it's been repressed.
Yeah,
you
it's
know?
Been
and
so like yeah, I know.
It's
no wonder people are stressed and like, you know, stressed out and like yeah, all the anger and all this hate in the world. Maybe
do that right now. We're gonna go back. I'm gonna just like get because I mean we did. Kind of touch on it. We never got to.
Yeah, we went off on a real tangent.
Massive tangent.
Yeah.
Huge. But we were at the stages of development, Freud stages of development, because I cracked me up. Like when you first told me about them, I was like, oh my god, that makes so much sense. Shitting, pissing, touching yourself. I'm like, oh, it's all the things I do every day. So
it is. I mean, yeah, it is pleasurable. I mean, after you've taken a dump, it's like done. you can see why it can get like if it's
when people are like, oh my god, I really need to shit, oh yeah, there it is, that feeling, I get that, right? But and then obviously the anal comes from that, and then you've done mouth, you've done,
so then arsehole. So that was mouth was like birth 1 year and then anal 1 to 3 years and then it's the phallic stage from about 3 to 6 years.
Ooh, I love the word phallic.
So this is when a boy would discover that his penis brings him pleasure, and he gets pleasure from urinating, that sort of thing. And
how
same
old
with
you then? Did you say?
Same with 3 to 6.
3 to 6, okay.
Same cool. With when a girl also discovers that like a clitoris is sensitive, and
oh yeah,
and this is like this relates to like self pleasure. So then the people who tend to get stuck in these sort of stages, they prefer to go on their own.
Right, so they prefer to pleasure themselves, kind of thing.
Yeah. If there's a problem at that stage, and they don't go past it,
that's when there could be problems.
Yeah. But right, I mean, it depends. See. Again, if it's a problem to that person, then if it's disturbing their life, let's say if they ever sought help from a psychologist or a psychiatrist, it would get help related to that, I guess, to get out of that, some form of psychology, psychotherapy.
Right, okay. That's good. Mm-hmm. And then, like, so after the phallic mm-hmm. stage, what's after that? Stage.
Then you got the latent stage.
The latent stage.
So that's about 6 till puberty, when you don't really have too much sexual sort of thoughts. You don't really think sexually, like, it's not in your head yet very much. And this time you just go about doing things normally. Here, I don't know, Freud's postulates that people who get stuck in this sort of state, they tend not to feel any sexual pleasure. Which is a bit strange.
So what is that term where people are just is it asexual?
Asexual.
Yeah.
But then again, true. They don't get sexual pleasure. I mean, they don't. Do they not? I'm not very sure. Again, the gender and sex bit. So asexual would be neither. So they don't identify with either. But do they still get sex? They might still have sexual pleasure.
Oh yeah, maybe that's not the right term then. The term for being. What is it?
Or gender non-conforming or gender fluid?
No, it's not to do with gender, because gender and sex is two different things.
That's true.
They're completely different, aren't they? But it's like a feeling. I think, what's the term? Let me try and look it up. That where someone just doesn't have...
I think it's asexual then. I think it's asexual, yeah.
They just don't want to have sex. They're just not really interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
They're more interested in like having a relationship with the person that is not sexual.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether that's asexual or not, but like, there are people out there that are like, yeah, I have no urges. I've never wanked. I've had no urges. I'm like, I can't identify with that, but...
Yeah, that's so sad. But yeah. I mean, if they're okay with it, fine, that's cool.
This is what I'm thinking. Like, it's like, okay, like, you know, the people I meet on cam all the time, they're like, love really into bestiality or something else on a completely different other spectrum. Like, as long as you're not, you know, raping any dogs, I'm all good with it. Yeah. It's the same thing. Yeah, with, like,
no animals are harmed yet.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
No animals are harmed in making this. Like, it's like that.
I don't know. I can't comment. No comment.
Yeah. No comment on that. Okay. All right, Dr. Kinkalot.
It's too intense a topic.
But no, that's what I mean about like people who aren't intersex at all. It's kind of like, well, if they're okay with it, then why judge?
Fine. It's cool.
It's those people who want to go to the doctors and say, oh my God, like, I actually feel nothing down below. Like,
yeah, they have a problem with it. Yeah, fair enough. Then they get a sorted.
That's sad, right?
Yeah,
that's
sad. Yeah.
Sad. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of people out there that like that more than you think.
True.
But then, so right, okay. I know this is proper dark, but I've always been like interested in it. Like, well, not interested, but I've got you here now, so I'm going to keep you here. With rape, people who are like, that is a fantasy, right? Now, so
that's like one of the like fetishes that like in the, there are these manuals that they diagnose illnesses, and rape is, like non-consensual sex is, some people fetishize that.
Yeah. So like, I mean, obviously a lot of women watch like rape porn, like, but it's not really rape. It's like, no, go away, come back, go away. And then she ends up, you know, it's like all the vampire movies that have ever been, or all the werewolf movies. It's always like a big, fat, powerful force. And there's a damsel and she gets, you know, raped by a wolf, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's like, that is since day dot been like a fantasy for a lot of women. Like,
I think that probably ties back to the image that sex has in the public. Like, it's something bad, but it's something that also brings them, like, it brings you pleasure. So they made that, I think they've kind of like, that's like, it's gone into that. It's like, I don't want it, but I want it.
Yeah, right. And that's another thing. So like, how does it get to that place in someone's mind where it's like a guy or a girl?
Mm-hmm.
Feels the need to do that, like, but genuinely in a non-consensual way, like it, and it's like serial rapists, people like that. Like, what part of the stages back in like Freud's teachings would it be like, oh, okay, there's an issue there? Like, where would, like,
no, that's so. I mean, if they just have regular sexual intercourse, then there's no problem, because it's, they've gone past that, like, sexual stages of development.
Oh, but I then, see.
Like later on, because of repressed sex or because of the way your mind works, I don't know what life experiences someone has on their journey here, but like that probably molds them to identifying with that as a fetish.
Right, I see. So it's not about the development, it's about the life experiences.
So I mean, the stages of development are tied to these different erogenous zones that people get stuck in or people have fetishes for.
Yeah.
And then once you get out of that, if you can have, if you've gone, so the last stage is the genital stage. So that's after puberty and onwards. And that's it. That's the last one. So that's when you realize that it's not your like self-pleasure. It's that like you get sex, you get pleasure out of having heterosexual, or having sex with somebody else.
Right, I see. I get that.
Like Freud said heterosexual sex because he believed that like homosexuality was an illness.
Did he?
Yeah, that was all, that was very prevalent like back then. And then I think it's only in like 1970s or 80s, like early 70s is when they sort of phased that out of being a clinical, like a medical illness.
Mad. That's madness. Yeah. Oh, that's absolutely mad that he had so many common sense, like some of the stuff that I've heard you say, some of the stuff I've read, I'm like, some of it is just common sense or things I can actually relate to.
Yeah.
And then other things are just so whack and out there. I'm like, what? How can a man, you know?
I mean, if you go back to like the phallic stage of the development, he talks about something called the Oedipal complex or Oedipus complex.
Oh yeah, the Oedipus or Oedipus. Yeah.
Oedipal complex. Yeah.
I've heard of that.
Like in the character from Greek mythology who kills his father and then marries his mother and then he later finds out and he blinds himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's very, yeah. So he believed that in every child's growth, like a, especially like a boy growing up, he would have developed feelings towards his mother, pleasurable feelings towards the mother.
Wow.
And then at some point it would, by the same time, they'd be afraid of the father. The father would sort of find out and sort of take the mother away or destroy this like relationship that he has with his mother.
Oh, is this why people always say, oh, a guy's always looking for his mother, like when they're looking for a girlfriend? Oh my God.
I don't know. So then the son tends to ape the father, he tends to copy the father, imitate the father. Right. So that he can then find a woman who is like his mother.
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
That's fucked. Okay, right. So you're saying that about men. What of women? What
he
women
didn't do? See. This is a problem with Freud. He did he never really explored what it might be like for a girl.
Typical men.
Yeah, oh! Yeah. So this is back in the day. This is what. So lots of these theories are sort of seen from. It's very like, I don't know whether I'm correct in saying this, but it's been like male centric. Some of these older psychological theories.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely. Did I ever talk to you about the hysteria thing?
Yep.
We spoke about that, didn't we?
Yes. And yeah, that hysteria is like an illness back a long, long time ago. But and the treatment was hysterectomy.
Yeah, right.
That's where the name comes from, hysterectomy.
Right, I see. Hysteria. So what was hysteria? Explain to me what they saw it as and what it is.
I think
now.
A good explanation would be like the movie, The Dangerous Method, and you know how Keira Knightley was all like screaming and shouting and all that sort of thing?
Yep.
Yeah, that was what they described hysteria to be. Like, it's a mental illness that they couldn't really put up. Like, I don't really think there was a... It was just a label that they gave people who... It wasn't proper mental illness, maybe, in most cases.
And some,
it was just
some
women who were maybe in difficult positions and, that sort of thing.
So, basically, it was a woman who needed a good fuck or some attention and she was acting out, basically.
Yeah possibly. Right. Well, and then they decided to remove the uterus to cure them.
Oh, but that wasn't the first port of call though. They fucked him with some weird dildo before.
Yeah, that as well. Yeah. That,
oh my God, man. Me and Rosie talked about this on one of the first podcasts. We watched that hysteria film with Maggie Gyllenhaal.
I remember. I remember you talking about that.
Oh, because you listened to my podcast. And and it's fascinating, isn't it, that the first dildo was made by a doctor who couldn't bother to use his hand.
Mm-hmm.
That is horrendous. But I completely didn't think that hysterectomy was because they took out a woman's uterus because she had hysteria, because basically
that's what it used to be a long time ago.
Yeah, but that's how it came. That's where it came from.
Yeah, that's where the name comes from.
That's mad. That's mad. So when did, I mean, I don't know if you know all these answers. I'm basically just bombarding you with questions. So I'm like, this is so interesting. Like hysteria, when did they put two and two together, and they were like, okay, every 2 weeks, Darlene is all, I don't know what you call her. Okay, what's that name? Oh, Fanny. Fanny's coming into the clinic, and yeah, he's getting fucking pummeled by Dr. Kinkalot's little wooden saber, and then she goes off feeling really, 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 really chilled out, and then she comes back every 2 weeks for the same, like, therapy or whatever. When did men put two and two together and think, oh, actually, she just needs a good fucking?
I don't know.
we need to look this up.
Yeah, we do. We can revisit this.
Yes, we will revisit this. I'd love to have you back. I've blabbered in your ear for a very long time now, but I've absolutely loved having you here. Thank you for coming.
No, thank you. It was a pleasure coming into the podcast.
Yeah. Honestly, you are a river of knowledge.
Really, I hope so. I hope I haven't like said anything to offend anyone or given inaccurate information.
Look, I mean, look, on this podcast isn't about accurate information, if that's what you're worried about.
Fair enough.
We talk about everything under the sun. But yeah, I mean, honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure. We'll definitely have you back. And like, anyone out there who's got any questions for Dr. fucking Kinkalot, send them to my DMs on my Instagram, Stripper Stories Podcast, and I will send them his way, and he will.
I'll have a look and see what I can do.
Yes! Let's fucking do it. They'll obviously be anonymous, so we will take your secrets to our graves, but we would love to hear from you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kinkalot.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chloe.
So, there you have it, kids. The first interaction between customer and slut, doctor and patient, and just all-round fan, because I've absolutely loved having him on the show this week. So yeah, like I said, if any of you got an ailment of any kind, things that won't fit up your arsehole, things that fit too far down your arsehole, please give us a massive DM on Instagram. I will pass them all over to him, and they'll all be anonymous, and maybe we'll read them out if we have permission next week's show. But that's it for us now at Stripper Stories. This week has come to an end. We have absolutely fucking loved this week. Next week, we have a massive plan for you next motherfucking Wednesday. So we'll see your holes then. Oh, your motherfucking holes. Bye. 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 I am your